Welcome to the award-winning Doing Customer Experience Right podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Sherman, a professional global speaker and CX expert. This show is about action over theory, focusing on applying proven strategies to deepen customer relationships and increase loyalty as your competitive advantage. Besides achieving better human and business outcomes, each episode aims to elevate your professional and personal growth too. To continue learning, please subscribe to my newsletter at doingcxright.com. Today, I'm thrilled to have Jeremy Hyde with us, the Director of Customer Service at Sun Country Airlines, steering the conversation towards a pivotal challenge across industries, which is the balance between competitive pricing, exceptional service quality, and customer loyalty. We're diving into how businesses can navigate the fine line between affordability and top-notch service, a debate especially relevant in the airline industry, yet applicable universally. We dive deep into topics like managing cost efficiency while maintaining superior customer service, the role of value in customer retention, and the ways innovations like AI are revolutionizing service delivery and pricing. Also, we discuss how understanding customer value perception extends beyond pricing to what truly earns their commitment. If you're curious about achieving the right mix of price and quality to ensure customer satisfaction and loyalty, and how these strategies apply across different sectors, then you are in the right place to get actionable strategies for your success. Now, let's get started. Hello, Jeremy Hyde. Welcome to the Doing CX Right Show.
Hey, Stacey. Thanks for having me.
I am excited for our conversation because we share in common deep knowledge of customer service, contact center space, agent experience, and all the above. And you work in a brand and I've been in a brand, so this is not going to be boring. So let's start out with, what do you do? Where do you work?
Sure. Yeah. So for those that don't know me, my name is Jeremy Hyde. I am the Director of Customer Service for Sun Country Airlines. We're the 11th largest airline in the U.S., so just outside of that top 10. We're based out of Minneapolis, and really serve the Minnesota community by and large. I mean, we serve other communities as well, but we specialize in taking Minnesotans out of the cold winters to places like Mexico and the islands and that sort of thing.
And what do you do there day to day or in general?
Yeah, so I lead the customer service team, primarily the contact center. That's the biggest group of folks that I'm leading. There's also like our formal complaint team that I lead and, you know, some of those sorts of functions.
Formal complaint, we'll have to get into that. Not trade secrets, but just in general about that process. I have a favorite question that I ask everybody, reflecting on your past and who you are today. If you could go back in time to talk to your younger 20-year-old self, based on what you know now that you didn't know then, what would you tell younger Jeremy?
Well, younger Jeremy thought he knew everything. So I'd probably try to help guide him through that a little bit and let him know actually there's a whole world of things that you don't know out there. But a little more seriously though, you know, my ability to grow and develop and any successes that I've had in my career have been heavily influenced by learning from others, by leaning on experts, by seeking out people that know things that I don't, that I'm interested in. And so, you know, soaking up that knowledge, networking, asking questions, developing this network of peers where not only, of course, you can lean on them, but you can start to give back to that community as well.
I love that answer. And every Gen Z should be listening to this. So let's get into the heart of the show right now. And I want to start off with doing customer experience right. Many people have different definitions of that. What is yours?
I think maybe a part of the reason that people have different definitions on this is that doing CX right should really be in the context of what you do and who you serve. So it starts with this clear vision of what is your organization? Who are the people that you're aiming to serve? You can't be all things to all people. And so looking for clarity on what it is that you're attempting to achieve so that you know what you're measuring yourself against. So like in our business as an example, you know, if you're a low-cost airline, who you are and who you're aiming to serve is different than a legacy carrier. You know, maybe you are more focused on leisure travelers that are paying with their own money to take that once every 2 years trip. That's different than the road warrior, the business person that needs to get in and out of Atlanta in 12 hours for a meeting. But if you don't have clarity on that, and a business person flies with you and they're unhappy with the product, you might go and start trying to make changes to appease them, but that's not who you're trying to serve. So I think it all starts with like, who are we? Who are we trying to serve? And being really clear about that vision so we know what we're measuring ourselves against.
Is there such a thing as world-class customer service?
I don't know. I mean, there are certainly organizations that consistently seem to deliver a really great service experience. So maybe. I think kind of in a similar vein to what I was just speaking to, though. Yeah, I mean, there's different service experiences that are that are appropriate for different types of organizations and that sort of thing. I think a complicating factor here, though, is that over time, I think consumers have started to expect the same level of experience from all organizations they do business with, right? Like, I go on Amazon and I can have coffee at my doorstep tomorrow. So now do I expect every business that's going to ship me something that it'll be on my doorstep tomorrow? Whether that's fair or not, maybe. So I think that's kind of a challenge and something that we have to work through is trying to set appropriate expectations for customers and hopefully customers will start to like recalibrate again at some point. Again, you know, there's trade-offs. Like a customer shouldn't expect a fancy steak dinner with a personal waiter at the price of a McDonald's value menu, but customers start to just kind of merge all of these experiences into a single, this is what it means to give good service. So that was like a really long, I don't know.
It's an interesting topic that probably we can dig into the whole time, but we won't on this occasion. So you talk about price and the airline, and there's all different airlines and why people pick airlines. I tend to believe that people buy based on experience. And when everything's relatively the same, they will choose the one that gives them a great experience. However, right, that's like the coffee of Starbucks versus your local, you know, dollar coffee.
Yeah.
When it comes to the airlines and you have the top tier and then you have the 10th and 11th, where does price come into play and how does price impact the customer choice and loyalty? Do you have an opinion on that?
You know, the reality is that price is either number one or number two for most people when it comes to choosing who they're going to fly. If they're spending their own money and if they're not, you know, of a certain class, perhaps, financially speaking. But I mean, you can see that's why you see the airlines, like they have to fight and it's like, oh, I'm going to undercut here, I'm going to undercut there, because people make decisions with their wallet, even though they say that they don't or that they won't. In our business and in many others, price is one of the primary reasons that they're making a decision. You know, what was it, a year or 2 years ago now or whatever, Frontier came out and said, we're no longer going to have a phone number. You cannot talk to us by phone for customer service. You can chat us, you can email us, you know, whatever, all digital, all non-voice. And the contact center and the customer experience people were like, oh, this business is like, this is going to fail. They're going to flop. And I don't know. I haven't really heard a whole lot about it since, to be honest. People that are flying Frontier because it's a low cost. They're able to get where they need to go. And especially if you're making a decision on, can I go? Can I afford to go? Or can I not afford to go? Then it's not about experience, right? It's like, can I get a price that I can actually afford? And if there's one airline or two airlines that offer that price, you're going to make the decision of going versus not going, not who am I going to choose based on the experience that's being offered.
Well, on the note of price and decision-making, a pet peeve, or I would say a source of pain, is when an airline or any company says it's a price, but then there's all these hidden fees and they're not transparent. What a way to really lose a customer. What's your perspective on that?
I guess it might depend on what we're talking about. I mean, if you're talking about like an a la carte pricing, so like Spirit model, for example, I know a lot of people feel that way, but people don't like a la carte pricing. The reality of it, though, in my opinion, is that you are offering choice. So like if you compare, again, not that we should ever compare these two, but if you were to compare Delta to Spirit, you're comparing, well, one, they're trying to offer two different products, but two, a bundled price versus an unbundled price. So for Delta, like the price is the price and it sits up here. For Spirit, you start down here and you get to choose what you want to add. And some people say like, but I need, not necessarily, right? If you're going for a weekend trip to Vegas, you don't need a big bag. You could have a backpack size bag that gives you the clothes that you need. So now you don't have to pay for a bag. If you're going with, you know, your buddy, your friend, you don't necessarily need to sit together or in the seats that are in the front of the aircraft. So you don't have to pay for seats. And so it is that idea of, again, from an accessibility perspective, if somebody is choosing between, can I afford to go or not go, versus the luxury of going, then having a very low ticket and then choosing which things are actually important to them does for some mean the difference between going somewhere and not going somewhere. So but it's annoying. I mean, psychologically, people don't like that model. But I think if we can take some of the emotion out of it and look at it through that particular lens, there's value that's offered there.
I love that you said there's a psychological component, and that's obviously marketing, marketing 101. What about safety? When you're talking about pricing, is there a perception in the airlines of safety, and that also dictates the price? How does that come into play?
I mean, in the U.S., we have really strong regulations in the airline industry when it comes to safety. Now, people may raise some questions if they've been watching the news lately and they see, you know, what happened on that Alaska flight with the Boeing aircraft and that sort of thing. But really, I mean, if you compare us to most of the rest of the world, we have very, very low safety issues within the U.S. You know, our chief operating officer actually says, you know, our passengers assume safety because we do not. And I think that that's something that across the industry in the U.S., what you will find, and when I say what you'll see, it's really blind to the customer. But if you were on the inner workings of it, is that safety is number one, safety is paramount. Everybody understands that if things were to go wrong, if you were to cut corners, there are some very serious consequences of that. So no, I wouldn't say that price would dictate safety.
Well, at the same time, I do think it comes down to trust, right? So if I trust that the airline is doing what it's saying and really quality checks and all that, then maybe there is a price impact based on my trust. That's any product, any business.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and really though, like choosing to spend a second dollar, if you don't feel like you can trust the organization, and trust could be a myriad of things, right? I mean, likely it's not a safety driven, whether or not you trust the organization is likely not safety driven unless something happened. But oftentimes it's some other perception, right? Yeah. You know, value thing, or I thought I was purchasing A, but I actually got B, you know, those sorts of things. Like anytime there's misalignment between what the customer expects and what they actually receive, that is a point at which trust can start to deteriorate, and they may think, you know, I'm not spending a second dollar with this organization.
Well, even with what happened with Southwest, right, and the technology failed, that could ruin trust, and therefore I don't care what you charge me, I don't want to do anything with that brand. I mean, that's what people could be saying. So I think it goes back to the psychology of price and perception. But segueing, so you said you have a complaint department. Mm-hmm. Now, I would hope that all companies are taking the voice of the customer and doing something with it. Can you explain what is your standard operating and what do you do with that feedback?
Sure. Yeah, so actually, one of the really great sources of information when it comes to the voice of the customer within our organization is from that complaint team that I was talking about. Now, you know, grains of salt, like we have to understand that they're almost exclusively hearing from people where something went wrong or the customer feels something went wrong. So it's not like that's a full representation of the customer. That's actually the subset of maybe unhappy customers. But it's a really great source of data where, in terms of wanting to understand where we have opportunities to improve, understanding trends and that sort of thing. Over the last 4 or 5 years, we moved into a new system. We reconfigured the way that our data is organized so that we can get at information, we can drill down, and we can understand the trends really well. And so then we can funnel that back up to our partners. So the e-com team, if there's a website issue, or operationally, if we're having a problem at XYZ airport or something of that nature, having the data available and being able to quickly and easily kind of digest it and understand it and pull out those trends and pull out those details has really changed the position that we have to more effectively inform the organization to influence change.
I want to talk about contact center, the agent experience. So in every company I've seen, they're the champions of customer experience and customer excellence, but they have these quotas on them of average handle time and hurry up and get off the phone. What's your perspective on how they're handling this paradox and what do leaders need to do differently, if anything, in your opinion?
Yeah, I'm probably one of the more outspoken voices that is contrarian to what has become common opinion on this particular matter.
Okay.
You know, quantity and quality go together. And the quantity that we're able to move through the system has a direct impact to the perception of quality that's delivered. You know, I think there was a time, I'm sure, when, you know, we were using a hammer and just pounding and saying, like, just be faster, just get off the phone, I don't care what it takes. I think most organizations have moved to a more nuanced approach if they are utilizing handle time or other productivity measures. But really, though, I mean, if you think about it, like, customers, first of all, they don't want to have to call. But if they do, like, they want to quickly and efficiently, with confidence, have their question answered or their issue resolved. So if you have agents that take much longer than should be required because their communication skills are lacking, or they're not as strong navigating the technology, or they struggle to utilize the resources to help them get to that answer, what's the likelihood they're delivering a really good experience to that customer? What's the customer perception? So I think this conversation, in my opinion, like, rather than being about if it's good or bad or we should do it, or the conversation, in my opinion, should be about how we approach it and how we have these conversations. Simply looking at somebody and saying, you're a 9 and you need to be an 8, that's not effective, right? That's that whole, like, hurry up and get off. It creates that perception of hurry up and get off. But if you can pinpoint Where are the issues? Where are the opportunities? Where are you more or less efficient than your peers? Is it skill or will? I mean, sometimes people just like to park in after call work because they just want to take a little extra break, right? That's a will issue. That's not a skill issue. But if the customer is spending a lot of time on hold, or they're taking 20 minutes trying to explain something that's not that complex, there's probably some things that we need to do to help develop that individual so they can achieve efficiency.
What is your favorite metric around customer experience and or the agent experience beyond NPS?
Yeah, I'm not an NPS guy. I really dislike NPS, but we're at a point where you almost have to use it to benchmark against everyone else. But that's a tale for another day. You know, I think that there you have to use multiple metrics to paint the full picture. And I don't think that there's any one thing that's going to be your barometer necessarily. And so, you know, the metrics that indicate to us if we are staffed appropriately, if we're working productively, you know, the quality of the service by our own measures, quality evaluation, that sort of thing. The quality of service by the measure of the customer themselves, whether that be a survey or complaint data, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, I'm using a number of things to try and give myself the full picture and understand, like, are we out of balance anywhere? Are there issues that we need to address? So I I don't have a single one. Every Monday, me and my team get together and go through, I don't know, 12 or 15 slides that represent different parts of all of this. So we're really kind of keeping track of where we're at and quickly able to identify if there are changes and trends and that sort of thing.
When you think about customer service for, let's say, the airlines in this case, and you talk about quality and training people and technology, what is your view on, you know, some companies have chat, they have an 800 number, they have like multi-sources of getting help, and you have others that you barely can find help. It's really difficult. In the airline industry, and then as a customer yourself, I'm curious, are people willing to pay more to get the help easily versus self-serve, right? I'll pay less and self-serve, or are they willing to pay more to be able to get service at that high quality? Where's that balance and what's your experience with that?
I'll answer your question, but I want to ask you a question to start to get at my point on this first. So let's say you're working with an airline and you have a question. It's somewhat basic, but you decide to pick up the phone and call them and you hear a message that says, just so you know, a transaction with the call center has a $10 fee. Do you feel pretty good about that? Because you're like, oh, I'm going to get really good human-powered service, and so I'm willing to pay a $10 fee to complete that transaction?
Psychologically, no.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
I think my short answer is no. Again, I think there's what people say and there's what people do. And those things are not always the same. Maybe there's some overlap, but no, I think people are not generally willing to pay more for a certain level of service. And I think that's where we, you know, as leaders like myself, what we have to figure out is how to be cost effective and be able to deliver the right type of service. And so, I mean, frankly, like that also looks different for different customers, right? So Frontier, you know, when they got rid of their phone, one of the first things I wondered about is certain people that may struggle to navigate in the digital world, regardless of the reason, right? Like, do they kind of get left behind? Are they not able to be supported because of that decision? And so I can't answer the question to that, but people with disabilities, people of a certain age, you know, that's probably more difficult for them to navigate than others. But so for me, for other leaders out there, cost is something that we have to manage, we have to consider, and we should always be looking for ways to be as cost effective as possible while delivering whatever vision we have for acceptable service to our customers. And again, so that means different things. I want self-service. I don't want to talk to a person. I want to be able to quickly and easily resolve my issue or answer my question myself. That's what I want. My 90-year-old grandmother does not. She wants to call someone and have somebody tell her what's going to happen and take care of it. And so we have to be able to, while staying true to understanding who we're trying to serve in terms of a customer, still also be able to offer a few different options to our customers, because there are different types of people with different needs.
Well, I think we also have to be aware of the psychology behind it, because I'd rather the price be built in and get that mm-hmm. superior service than actually have to pay the dollars each yeah. time. So I think service is going to continue to matter. And again, there's the psychology of balancing it and equipping that agent so that they're not coming across looking like they're, you want to talk to me, you got to pay me. Like, that would be an awful experience. Right. So, and I think that as AI comes into the picture now, it's going to be even more intriguing on how perception of cost, perception of help and care, what the expectations are. That's going to be really fascinating where that goes.
Yeah. I wonder too, though, if it's going to create, see if I can figure out how I'm trying to say this, your very large enterprise organizations have the money and the technical resources and the know-how to implement AI. Smaller organizations, small businesses, mom and pops, even up to some medium size, whatever, may not have that same capability. And so what sort of gap do we start to see between the smaller organizations and the larger organizations? You know, the smaller ones may have to try to manage it through people power, but then from a cost perspective, they can never match up against the quote unquote big guys. And so do we start to see just the big guys continue to get bigger and gobble up the small guys because they can't compete from a price perspective?
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. All right. Well, we're getting down to the end here. Rapid fire. If I had a ton of leaders and CEOs in my room right now, what's the one takeaway you want them to remember?
Actually, I'd probably go a little bit deeper on what we were just commenting on, but more specific to the contact center, there's a technology gap that's in terms of skills within the contact center. We didn't spend the last 30 years becoming technologists and understanding these emerging technologies, and we got to make sure that we develop that talent and that skill set within the contact center.
And invest in the people to save them time, to give them the coaching and the simulations and all that to support them. So really good point. Mm-hmm. Leadership. What is the best leadership advice you've received, Jeremy, in any of your jobs?
I think not a specific piece of advice per se, but you know, there's a particular leader that cared enough about me to have difficult conversations with me, to challenge me, to call me out when I needed to be called out, and to give me opportunities even when maybe I was at times getting in my own way. And so I think that really was pivotal, having somebody that cared enough about me to have those conversations.
Yeah, I have not had a lot of those bosses.
They're special.
They are special. I can count on one hand, but definitely that is a good advice for everyone listening, and that's in your control. So please apply that. Well, I want to thank you so much, Jeremy. I could have gone on and on, but we've run out of time. And thank you for being here. And in the show notes, I'll have your social media and ways to reach you. I'm sure they will. So thank you, really, for being here.
Thank you. Really appreciate you having me, Stacey.
Thank you so much for joining today. I hope you will apply the lessons shared, and also requesting if you would leave a review on Apple would mean a lot. Head over to doingcxright.com to learn more ways to connect with me and improve your CX. Until next time, I'm Stacey Sherman, Doing CX Right.